Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson. Performed by Patrick Horgan. Kidnapped. Being memoirs of the adventures of David Balfour in the year 1751. How he was kidnapped and cast away, his sufferings in a desert isle, his journey in the wild Highlands, his acquaintance with Alan Breck Stewart and other notorious Highland Jacobites, with all that he suffered at the hands of his uncle, Ebenezer Balfour of Shaws, falsely so-called. Written by himself and now set forth by Robert Louis Stevenson. Dedication. My dear Charles Baxter, if you ever read this tale, you will likely ask yourself more questions than I should care to answer. As, for instance, how the Appin murder has come to fall in the year 1751, how the Torren rocks have crept so near to Ered, or why the printed trial is silent as to all that touches David Balfour. These are nuts beyond my ability to crack, but if you tried me on the point of Alan's guilt or innocence, I think I could defend the reading of the text. To this day, you will find the tradition of Appin clear in Alan's favour. If you inquire, you may even hear that the descendants of the other man who fired the shot are in the country to this day. But that other man's name, inquire as you please, you shall not hear, for the Highlander values a secret for itself, and for the congenial exercise of keeping it. I might go on for long to justify one point and own another indefensible. It is more honest to confess at once how little I am touched by the desire of accuracy. This is no furniture for the scholar's library, but a book for the winter evening schoolroom when the tasks are over and the hour for bed draws near. And honest Alan, who is a grim old fire-eater in his day, has in this new avatar no more desperate purpose than to steal some young gentleman's attention from his Ovid, carry him a while into the Highlands and the last century, and pack him to bed with some engaging images to mingle with his dreams. As for you, my dear Charles, I do not even ask you to like this tale, but perhaps when he is older, your son will. He may then be pleased to find his father's name on the flyleaf. And in the meanwhile, it pleases me to set it there, in memory of many days that were happy, and some now perhaps as pleasant to remember that were sad. If it is strange for me to look back from a distance, both in time and space, on these bygone adventures of our youth, it must be stranger for you who tread the same streets, who may tomorrow open the door of the old speculative, where we begin to rank with Scott and Robert Emmet and the beloved and inglorious Macbean, or may pass the corner of the close, where that great society, the LJR, held its meetings and drank its beer, sitting in the seats of Burns and his companions. I think I see you moving there by plain daylight, beholding with your natural eyes those places that have now become, for your companion, a part of the scenery of dreams. How in the intervals of present business the past must echo in your memory. Let it not echo often without some kind thoughts of your friend, R.L.S. Skerryvore, Bournemouth. Chapter 1. I set off upon my journey to the House of Shaws. I will begin the story of my adventures with a certain morning, early in the month of June, the year of grace 1751, when I took the key for the last time out of the door of my father's house. The sun began to shine upon the summit of the hills as I went down the road, and by the time I had come as far as the manse, the blackbirds were whistling in the garden lilacs, and the mist that hung around the valley in the time of the dawn was beginning to arise and die away. Mr. Campbell, the minister of Essendean, was waiting for me by the garden gate, good man. He asked me if I had breakfasted, and hearing that I lacked for nothing, he took my hand in both of his and clapped it kindly under his arm. "Well, Davy, lad," said he, "I'll go with you as far as the ford to set you on the way." And we began to walk forward in silence. "Are you sorry to leave Essendean?" said he, after a while. "Why, sir," said I, "if I knew where I was going, or what was likely to become of me, I would tell you candidly, Essendean is a good place indeed. and I have been very happy there, but then I have never been anywhere else. My father and mother, since they are both dead, I shall be no nearer to in Essendean than in the Kingdom of Hungary, and to speak truth, if I thought I had a chance to better myself where I was going, I would go with a good will. Aye, said Mr. Campbell. Very well, Davy, then it behooves me to tell your fortune, or so far as I may. When your mother was gone, and your father, the worthy Christian man, began to sicken for his end, he gave me in charge a certain letter, which he said was your inheritance. So soon, says he, as I am gone, and the house is read up and the gear disposed of, all which, Davy, hath been done, give my boy this letter into his hand, and start him off to the house of Shaws, not far from Cramond. That is the place I came from, he said, and it's where it befits that my boy should return. He is a steady lad, your father said, and a canny goer, and I doubt not he will come safe and be well liked where he goes. The house of Shaws, I cried. What had my poor father to do with the house of Shaws? Nay, said Mr. Campbell, who can tell that for a surety? That the name of that family, Davy boy, is the name you bear, Balfours of Shaws. An ancient, honest, reputable house, peradventure in these latter days decayed. Your father, too, was a man of learning, as befitted his position. No man more plausibly conducted school, nor had he the manner or the speech of a common dominie. But as you will yourself remember, I took aye a pleasure to have him to the manse to meet the gentry. And those of my own house, Campbell of Kilrennet, Campbell of Dunswire, Campbell of Minch, and others, all well-kenned gentlemen, had pleasure in his society. Lastly, to put all the elements of this affair before you, here is the testamentary letter itself, superscribed by the own hand of our dear departed brother. He gave me the letter, which was addressed in these words, to the hands of Ebenezer Balfour, a squire of Shaws, in his house of Shaws. These will be delivered by my son David Balfour. My heart was beating hard at this great prospect, now suddenly opening before a lad of 17 years of age, the son of a poor country dominie in the forest of Ettrick. Mr. Campbell, I stammered. And if you were in my shoes, would you go? Of a surety, said the minister. That would I. And without pause. A pretty lad like you should get to Cramond, which is near in by Edinburgh, in 2 days of walk. If the worst came to the worst, and your high relations, as I cannot but suppose them to be, somewhat of your blood, should put you to the door, you can but walk the 2 days back again and risp at the manse door. But I would rather hope that you shall be well received, as your poor father forecast for you, and for anything that I can, come to be a great man in time. And here, Davy laddie, he resumed, it lies near upon my conscience to improve this parting and set you on the right guard against the dangers of the world. Here he cast about for a comfortable seat, lighted on a big boulder under a birch by the trackside, sat down upon it with a very long, serious upper lip, and the sun now shining in upon us between two peaks, put his pocket handkerchief over his cocked hat to shelter him. There, then, with uplifted forefinger, he first put me on my guard against a considerable number of heresies, to which I had no temptation, and urged upon me to be instant in my prayers and reading of the Bible. That done, he drew a picture of the great house that I was bound to, and how I should conduct myself with its inhabitants. Be souple, Davy, in things immaterial, said he. Bear ye this in mind, that though gentle-born, you have had a country rearing. Dinna shame us, Davy. Dinna shame us in yon great muckle house with all of these domestics upper and under. Show yourself as nice, as circumspect, as quick at the conception, and as slow of speech as any. As for the laird, remember he's the laird. I say no more. Honour to whom honour. It's a pleasure to obey a laird, or should be, to the young. Well, sir, said I, it may be, and I'll promise you I'll try to make it so. Why, very well, Sid, replied Mr. Campbell heartily. And now to come to the material, or to make a quibble to the immaterial, I have here a little packet which contains four things. He tugged it as he spoke, and with some great difficulty, from the skirt pocket of his coat. Of these four things, the first is your legal due, the little pickle money for your father's books and plenishing, which I have bought, as I have explained from the first, in the design of reselling at a profit to the incoming dominie. The other three are gifties that Mrs. Campbell and myself would be blithe of your acceptance. The first, which is round, will likely please you best at the first off go, but, oh, Davy, laddie, it's but a drop of water in the sea. It'll help you but a step and vanish like the morning. The second, which is flat and square and written upon, will stand by you through life, like a good staff for the road and a good pillow to your head in sickness. And as for the last, which is cubical, that'll see you, it's my prayerful wish, into a better land. With that he got upon his feet, took off his hat, and prayed a little while aloud, and in affecting terms, for a young man setting out into the world, then suddenly took me in his arms and embraced me very hard, then held me at arm's length, looking at me with his face all working with sorrow, and then whipped about, and crying good-bye to me, set off backward by the way that we had come at a sort of jogging run. It might have been laughable to another. But I was in no mind to laugh. I watched him as long as he was in sight, and he never stopped hurrying, nor once looked back. Then it came in upon my mind that this was all his sorrow at my departure, and my conscience smote me hard and fast, because I, for my part, was overjoyed to get away out of that quiet countryside and go to a great, busy house among rich and respected gentlefolk of my own name and blood. Davy, Davy, I thought, was ever seen such black ingratitude? Can you forget old favours and old friends at the mere whistle of a name? Fie, fie, think shame. And I sat down on the boulder the good man had just left and opened the parcel to see the nature of my gifts. That which he had called cubical, I had never had much doubt of. Sure enough, it was a little Bible to carry in the plaidnook. That which he had called round, I found to be a shilling piece. And the third, which was to help me so wonderfully, both in health and sickness, all the days of my life, was a little piece of coarse yellow paper, written upon thus in red ink. To make lily of the valley water. Take the flowers of lily of the valley and distill them in sack, and drink a spoonful or two as there is occasion. It restores speech to those that have the dumb palsy. It is good against the gout. It comforts the heart and strengthens the memory. And the flowers put into a glass close stopped and set into an hill of ants for a month. Then take it out and you will find a liquor which comes from the flowers which keep in a vial. It is good, ill or well, and whether man or woman. And then in the minister's own hand was added, likewise for sprains, rub it in, and for the colic, a great spoonful in the hour. To be sure, I laughed over this, but it was rather tremulous laughter. And I was glad to get my bundle on my staff's end and set out over the ford and up the hill upon the farther side, till just as I came on the green drove road, running wide through the heather, I took my last look of Kirk Essendine. The trees about the manse, and the big rowans in the kirkyard, where my father and my mother lay.